So anyway, everyone thought this is going to be like that again. But it didn't happen. The president before had really milked the treasury dry. And Carlos Andres Perez didn't have any money. And he began implementing the International Monetary Funds program, which basically was prices should get to their international levels, but salaries should stay where they were. Okay? And on February 26th of 1989, the price of gasoline went up. And the next day, this is Charlie Hardy's interpretation, the next day people went to get on the bus and the bus drivers were charging more than they were supposed to. And imagine you just have enough money to get to work and get back, maybe something to eat, and they're charging double, and you're wondering what's going to happen when you get to work, and someone throws a rock, busts a window, I don't know where it went, but within hours, on the 27th of February, Caracas just exploded. First it was food, then it was clothing, then it was anything you could get your hands on. To give you some idea of what the environment was like, okay, before you left the States, who here bought a loaf of bread within the last week? Anyone? How much did you pay?
$4.
Oh, no. That's bad news. $4. I hate to use that as an example. Did someone use less, pay less? $2. Okay, let's, just to be a little bit nice. $2. Imagine when you go home next week, it's $12 a loaf. And yours is $24 a loaf. That's what happened in January of 1989 here. You could buy three pieces of bread for one believer, and within a week or two, it was one piece of bread for two believers. It had gone up like 600%. And people were just, I mean, you could just feel the tension. And on 27th of February, 1989, things exploded. I want to translate this into U.S. terms for you once again. How many of you remember Tiananmen Square? You young people might not have heard of it. Everybody? That was in June of 1989. I think we may have had a worse massacre here 4 months before in February, March of 1989 in Caracas. I don't know how many people died in Tiananmen Square. The numbers, when you look, they vary, they've gone down. I can give you the names of over 500 people who died during that time. I was in a hospital morgue and saw the naked bodies of young people just strewn on the floor because there was no place else to put them. Year after that, I slept in the cemetery several nights. When a judge got word that there was a common grave, the government denied any such thing. And so we slept in the cemetery so no one could violate the place. And there were 68 bodies in garbage bags. Okay. How many people died? Like I say, I'll give you the names of 500 or more. But like one day, here are these two girls show up, high school girls. They ditch school with a photograph of their brother. They saw on television this grave was being opened. Their parents forbade them to speak about their brother who disappeared. Said it'll only cause problems. But they grabbed a photo, did school, and went to say to people, you know, if you find someone like this, how many people like that were mowed down? Okay, now I think, and that's something you don't hear about when you hear about Chavez and his rebellion and all this kind of stuff. It was not a particularly nice time here. Interestingly, a little side point, if you ever get a chance to look at the words of the Venezuelan national anthem, they're beautiful. But from what I was told, the president ordered that the national anthem be taken off the radio and television. It used to be at 6 in the morning, noon, and 6 at night. Some countries, Catholic countries, have the Angelus in the morning, noon, night, and so on. Here it was the national anthem. He ordered it to be taken off the radio because one of the lines in it is, "Let us follow the example which Caracas has set for us." It goes back to a time when they were rebelling about something else, and so he didn't want it. So that was February 27th and the days following it of 1989. Chavez didn't participate in that when the troops were turned loose. But he was meeting with other soldiers, talking about, you know, hey, what is this whole thing about? And Simon Bolivar supposedly once said, damned be the soldier who uses his armament against his own people. And they said, that's what we are called upon to do. We're supposed to be defending our people. But we were out killing our own people. And so from there they began to talk, and then on February 4th, 1992, Chavez led a rebellion. Attempt to overthrow Carlos Andres Perez. I put here officially 14 deaths, and there's a reason for that. When Chavez was running for president, the Wall Street Journal would continually identify him as ex-leader of a bloody rebellion, ex-leader of a bloody rebellion. CNN in 2002, after the coup, spoke of him, if you look at their articles, ex-leader of a bloody rebellion is back in power, okay, in 2000. I talked to a geologist in another part of Venezuela and said, how many people died in that rebellion of Chavez? And, oh, lots. Well, how many would you say? A lot. Well, maybe 9,000, he said. Talked to an owner of a franchise here in Caracas. No, not that many, maybe 6,000. I talked to someone with the Ministry of Information, a young man in his 20s. No, maybe 1,000. Well, I went to work, a human rights organization which documents all people killed by military force and so on, said there were rumors of 80 deaths in Caracas that day, but checking all hospitals, they could only come up with 48 deaths from all reasons whatsoever. I put the number between 12 and 24. Then I came across a newspaper from 2-3 days afterwards where Carlos Andres Perez recognized 14 deaths. And it would have been to his advantage to up the figures, okay? Now, what they don't tell you about either is what was Caracas like right before that 1992 rebellion. 1991, October, November, I'd pick up the newspaper every day trembling, wondering if a student had been killed on the street the day before. It wasn't every day. Something like a person who has an alcoholic partner. Maybe the person doesn't come home drunk every day, but you live with that worry every day. Near the teachers' university in El Paraiso, there was graffiti written on the side of the wall that said, if we are the future of the world, why are you killing us? Okay. They don't tell you what it was like after this attempted coup either. When at 8 o'clock at night, we would beat on pots and pans, and the military would come through and just open fire. Blow whistles at 8 o'clock, the same thing. And so you look at Provea, a human rights group's list of people, so-and-so, 14, 16, 24, 32, whatever age, shot while during the blowing of whistles or shot during the beating of pots and pans. Okay. They don't tell you about all that. They just talk about Chavez, leader, ex-leader of a bloody rebellion. Okay. Again, being hit on the head. I have never liked graffiti. I just don't think it's nice to go around writing on people's walls and so on. But someone said to me, Charlie, the wealthy own newspapers, television stations, all this. They can pay for their ads if they want to. The only thing we can do is buy a can of spray paint and write on the walls of the city our messages, okay? Again, boing, boing, boing. So Chavez had his rebellion. He spoke for only a few moments. And during that time, he said, I assume responsibility for the failure of this mission. And for now, por ahora, our objectives are not attainable. Well, the next day, the walls of the city were covered with for now, for now, for now, for now. Okay. Later on that year, there was a second rebellion. More people did die in that, at least 60 deaths. Also, a prison, the gates of a prison were opened, and the prisoners thought they were freed. And as they ran out, they were just mowed down. I'm saying that was the environment. When I went to El Salvador and wrote my theology book in 1993, it was more peaceful in El Salvador than it was here at that time. It was after the war there. Here, it was just constant attention in that regard. Okay, Chavez, that day when he had his rebellion, someone in Congress shouted, "Death to the traitors." But there was an old man who had been president before, Rafael Caldera of the Christian Democrats, who said, "Maybe the people are saying something." You know, people didn't pour out in the streets like when Chavez was kidnapped. No one was out in the streets saying, "Where's President Carlos Andres Perez?" I mean, Chavez would have been elected president that day, even though no one saw him for more than less than a minute and a half, okay? Woman, barrio woman said, "I can't believe it. He accepted responsibility. I have never in my whole life heard anyone in Venezuela accepting responsibility for a failure," okay? And the other thing for now, okay, Caldera spoke in behalf of him. He ended up being elected president because he spoke some kind words. There were only two people, in, as far as I know, that spoke favorably of Chavez in Congress that day. One was Caldera, the other is a present minister of education. Okay, but he was elected president. Chavez didn't particularly like him either, but he had this debt to pay and he let Chavez out of prison. Chavez ran around the country visiting with people, often sitting in the audience rather than giving the talks, but I mean, he was a hero. People loved him, but he was with the people. You came up to the elections of 1998, okay? There were, the Christian Democrats and Social Democrats had a hard time coming up with a candidate. People were losing their faith in these two parties that had controlled the country. But there was a woman who was going up in the polls, Irene Saez. She was a former Miss Universe, mayor of part of Caracas. A side point, bring me back to her. Caracas is divided into five, like, boroughs, five municipalities, a little bit like New York. So there's the mayor over all of Caracas, Juan Barreto, you were in that mayor's office, but there's five individual areas. Have you already heard this? And so you were in the Municipio Libertador. One area has like 2.5 million people, barrios. Another area has like 1.5 million people, barrios. Then there's the part where Irene Saez was mayor, about 72,000 people. There's another one that has, you know, like 250,000 people, another one a little bit. Okay, but at the present time, just a side thing, the three small municipalities are governed by anti-Chavez mayors. The two huge ones are governed by Chavez supporters. But they have 2.5 million people's problems, barrios. The others have wealthy people, embassies, businesses, taxes, and all that kind of stuff. And they always say, look at these beautiful municipalities, and look at this one where there's garbage on the street still, okay? So, just that. Irene Saez was mayor of the little tiny area of Chacao, and she was going up in popularity. 20%, 22, 25, 27, I think she got 29%. And the Christian Democrats said, let's back her also. If you get a copy of the ballot, you'll see that there's like 40 parties right now that are backing Rosales, there's maybe 20 backing Chavez and so on. Well, the 24? Okay. But so the Christian Democrats said, we'll back Irene. And she accepted it. And it was like a kiss of death. And here's this Chavez is coming along. And there was another guy, Salas Romer, who had been governor of the state of Carabobo. And he formed his own party, and he was going up a bit. Well, as you got close to the elections, the Social Democrats chose one of their former leaders. I remember the headlines, Alfaro doubles in popularity. He went from 1 to 2%, I think, or something like that. But, I mean, it just wasn't catching on. Elections were coming, and Chavez is going up. They decided the only way we can win is throw our backing behind Salas Romer. Okay, you've seen the ballots. They still have the photos of the candidates on there? Yeah. If you voted for the COPE party with the photo of Miss Universe on it, your vote went to a middle-aged man, Salas Romer. because a week before they decided to drop Miss Universe. Okay. So, I mean, just to give you an idea how dirty the elections were. Not only that, but usually the presidential elections and the congressional elections were the same time. They decided to have the congressional elections first, beforehand, because they knew if it were going to happen at the same time, they were going to lose, all kinds of things. So Chavez came into power, great celebration, yes, and newspapers like to say everyone was happy. Not everyone was happy. He went to work on the Constitutional Convention. This was his idea. We need a new constitution. When the time came for him to be inaugurated, he had a new presidential sash made because he said, I don't want to wear that these others wore before. He was criticizing the newspaper, spending a couple $1,000s having a new sash made in Spain or whatever. And when time came, he put his hand on the Constitution and said, I take my oath on this dying Constitution. Okay? So he was elected, he went into power. The first thing he called for was a referendum. Should we have a constitutional convention? Yes. Then who goes to it? And it was almost everyone who said they were backing Chavez that went to it. Then on December 15th, 1999, the new constitution was approved. But that night, that day, it had been raining for a couple weeks. And that day, the mountains just came down, especially along the coast, but also in Caracas. International Red Cross at one point estimated that maybe 50,000 people died that night, December 15th, 1999. There wasn't a big celebration here for the millennium. If you could see the mountains, it looked like a bear, a giant bear with claws just went through, okay? It was just days of seeing people saying, this is, you know, my child, this is my mother, if anyone sees it. It was rich and it was poor. People just died. It was horrible. And the Catholic cardinal said that God was punishing the people for what they had done. Seemed he was referring to the approval of the Constitution that day. And that gave the opposition a chance to start working once again. Okay. One newspaper said Chavez was on an island celebrating, drinking and so on that night, because a bartender told them that he was there. And it was false. A week later it came out, it was false. But it was that kind of manipulation of the press. pardon me. I'm going to stop for a second because I said something about the press. And there's a few points that I want to make sure that I get across to you. One, let's talk about the press. Because in the Boston Globe within the past few days, there's an article talking about how Chavez, the new laws against the press and so on, and this and that. I'd like to show you a newspaper from 10th of February, 1992. Now, some of you might not read, I'll carry this around because I really should get a copy of this made. This, I want you to look at this editorial here to see freedom of the press. And half a page is empty, okay? But I'm going to show the rest of you even a better editorial on page 4. Even those of you who don't read Spanish could do all right with this one. The whole page is empty, okay? In other words, the newspaper was going to press that night, and the government said, you're not going to print that, you're not going to print that, and so they just wiped it out, all right? That was 1992, before Chavez, okay? Freedom of press. Oh, we had wonderful freedom of press here in Venezuela, okay? If you come up to 2002, Chavez, you remember the coup was in April. Here's a newspaper from October, just a few months after that. As soon as, you know, you would have thought after all those people went out and Chavez was back in power, people would say, oh, he's back in power. No, they didn't let up. Here's a demonstration against Chavez. They're giving him a few days, an ultimatum, to either resign or to call for elections. Full color, full page, inside, full color, full page. It was a big demonstration, lots of people there. That was on the 10th of October. This is the newspaper, the 11th. 3 days later, there was a demonstration in favor of Chavez, okay? Also lots of people there. This is the front page of that same newspaper. The Anaheim wins the World Series or something and so on. Someone's calling Chavez to be brought into court for what happened during the coup. There's one little picture here, a woman sitting on a curb with a sign that says, I'm hungry and out of work, but I will stick with Chavez to the very end. Okay, that's the coverage. If you go to page 4, you can see the tens, hundreds of thousands of people on the street, but they also show the buses on the street that brought all those people who just had to be there, okay? Now, I'm saying, this is freedom of press under Chavez. Look at that to what you saw before Chavez. There has never been such freedom of press in Venezuela as there is today. There has never been such freedom of press. So we come, I'm gonna really skip over the coup on April 11th, 13th, except to show you one little, because along the way, you've all heard about that and more or less what happened. But something you might not have heard of, there was an ad in the newspaper. The coup happens on the 11th, the 12th. This is the morning of the 13th. There was an ad in the newspaper that said, Telcel, this is one of the cellular telephones, celebrates with all of Venezuela freedom, liberty, freedom to call wherever you want to, long distance, nationally, free from your cell phone to whatever other company. It doesn't even matter the company. To celebrate with your loved ones the brilliant future that waits for us. Telcel Bell South. What would you think about that in the United States? Someone kidnaps Bush and Citgo runs an ad. Free gasoline in all filling stations tomorrow. You know. But what is really neat about this ad that I love, poetic justice, for those of you who have studied literature, poetic justice, in case you don't remember what it is, I put a pail of water over the door so that when you walk out tonight, it's gonna fall on you. Okay? But I forget and I go first and it falls on me. Down here in fine print, this will be valid this Sunday, the 14th of April. Wait, Chavez was back in power at 2 o'clock on the 14th of April. So those who got free telephone calls that day were those who were celebrating with their loved ones the brilliant future that waited for them, but not the ones that Telcel Bell South wanted to do. Okay, before I get away from the press, this is something that relates to the United States. July 11th, 2005, that's a year ago, Times Hurricane Hugo article, all right? First paragraph. Since he became president in 1999, Chavez has publicly, in Spanish, called Bush an A, with a line after it, who is trying to assassinate him. Okay, Charlie Hardy just happened to be in Cheyenne, Wyoming, getting car fixed, and that was in the... You don't have to believe in God. I believe in God. There's some strange force out there that just happened to have this time. The only time I saw last year was this one, as far as I remember. And I wondered, what would that A mean? I mean, just think about it. Call Bush an animal who is trying to assassinate him. Amphibian, I don't know. But shortly after, they clarified the matter because on the internet, their site had that Chavez called Bush in Spanish an ASS with a line after it. I know what you're thinking, associate. That's what I was thinking. Chavez called, because they're both presidents. Assistant.
Assassin.
Well, assassin, but that's already here in the, I mean, they wrote that word out in full, so it had to be some other word. I figured assistant because Bush has helped Chavez gain in notoriety and so on. So I called Brian Ellsworth, okay, one of the people who wrote this article, and I said, hey, you know, what is this A? And to my surprise, he said it meant asshole. Now, the thing is, if you go back, I heard Chavez when he gave the speech. He said, if President Bush believes everything that his advisors are saying about Venezuela, he is a pendejo. And everyone laughed. Pendejo in Venezuela means a stupid person, someone who's being taken advantage of. When I was first in the barrio, I said to someone, what is pendejo? It's like your spouse is being unfaithful, your friends tell you, but you don't believe it. You're being used, okay? Here is a newspaper that was put out for the youth festival, World Youth Festival in, it was 2005. Here they have Venezuelanisms. Pendejo, tonto, stupid. Corto de mente, doesn't have all the books in the library here. Subject to being made fun of. Go to the Oxford Dictionary and look for pendejo, and you do not find asshole. Who decided that it should be asshole? Patrick Markey and Pascal Fletcher of Reuters, the day after he gave this talk, said, Chavez calls Bush asshole as foes fight. When you get home, put into Google, Bush, Chavez, asshole, and see the thousands of times that this has been repeated. And Chavez never said that. Ted Koppel on Nightline said, Mr. Chavez, President Chavez, you called President Bush an asshole. And Chavez replied, well, I'm not sure I used that word. I've been hard on him. I was a little bit ticked off that Chavez's advisors had never told him to know straight out that he had never used that word. Reuters outsources lots of their stuff. I was wondering if Patrick Markey and Pascal Fletcher might have been in India writing it. Maybe in India, pendejo means asshole. I don't know. But you see, just within the past month or so, a Reuters photographer was fired because he put more smoke in a picture than was there. This is what I read. And supposedly there was a dead kid, and he moved a toy near that dead kid. And so he was fired for that. What about these two jerks? I mean, it's one thing to doctor a photo. What about putting words in a president? Even if I didn't vote for Bush, I don't like someone calling my president an asshole, and especially the president of another country. It doesn't give me a very good opinion of that President Chavez, who says something like this. Okay, but you see how dirty things have been with regard to this whole, where is the real Venezuela, okay? All right, well, we're going to finish this whole thing, and you can sit down and then relax and enjoy the meal. I must be talking faster than usual. This is usually a 2-3 hour talk. I was going to summarize it quickly and say to you that I had been talking since 4 o'clock when you were supposed to be here, and I was going to give it to all of you fast and say, now we're up to 2002, December. Okay. So there is this coup in April, and you get up December, they're not letting up. They call for a nationwide strike. Can you imagine for 2 months in the United States, ABC, CBS, NBC, even CNN, Fox, no commercials whatsoever for 2 months except anti-Chavez propaganda? For 2 months. Here's a typical ad. There's room in Venezuela for everyone except you. Sponsored by the Democratic Coordination. That Democratic Coordination, by the way, that's somewhat the same thing that was used, I think, in Nicaragua. In IT, it was the Coordinación Democratic or something. The CIA apparently has a template where they just fill in the names of different countries for what they want to do or something like that. But at any rate, here, another ad during children's programming. You see the back of a man, he's up to bat, okay? Chavez likes to play baseball. There's a little kid pitching. Strike one, strike two, strike three, you're out. He drops the bat and walks away from the plate, sponsored by the Democratic coordination. Okay? Now, somewhere along the way, some people gathered around one of the television stations and threw a rock through the window. And that was carried throughout the whole world, the violence of Chavez supporters. And a mother said to me, "That's violence? What about them coming into my house for the past 2 months and telling my children that they should hate the president that I elected and that I love? That's not violence." Okay? We had no Pepsi-Cola for 2 months, no Coca-Cola for 2 months. Where I live, everything was open, all the restaurants except McDonald's. A shopping center, everything open except Subway sandwiches. Across the street, everything open except Wendy's. Who was this strike about? We used to. Well, yeah. The thing is, in the rich areas, they had the stores would only open for 3 hours in the morning. People would stand in line, and this is wonderful. We're going to get him down. You know, Christmas without Chavez. Merry Christmas without Chavez. Merry Christmas without Chavez. That was Feliz Navidad sin Chavez. Feliz Navidad sin Chavez. They urged people not to celebrate Christmas. Wait until Chavez is out. Any day he would be out. Every night at 8 o'clock, there would be the president, president of the Chamber of Commerce, the president. Of the labor association, the head of the oil company, saying, you know, things are going great. And people were in Plaza Altamira looking at that, yeah. What they didn't realize, outside of the world, it was all different. One kid who goes to a rich school said to me afterwards, "The problem with the strike was that everyone didn't go along with it." That's right, that was a problem. It was only in the country club mentality that they were living that it was having success.